Accession number 20484, Reel 1.
Derek Cakebread, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Tottenham, on the 27th of November.
1922. Did you grow up and have your schooling in Tottenham?
In Tottenham, yes. Yes, I've lived in Tottenham right until I was married, or called out. And
so you were 18 when the war broke out?
I was 16 when the war broke out, yeah. And I registered when I was 18, and I got called up when I was 19.
Were you doing a job when war was declared?
Oh, yes, I was working. I was working in a print, yeah.
Did you hear Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, yes, yeah. In fact, yeah, we was playing football over the Tottenham Marshes. And when war was declared, we ran home.
How did you feel about it?
Well, I don't know. I was young, really. Well, no, I went round to Prince of Wales Hospital filling sandbags after that. Then, of course, went to work the next morning. Got to normal, really.
Were you in any early bombing of England by the German Air Force?
Oh, yes. We had a blast out, actually, one night, and we had to evacuate, but then we moved back because a big fire was over the opposite side of the road. And then we moved back the next morning when it was over, yeah.
What was your address at that time?
I was number 9 the Avenue, Tottenham, Bruce Grove.
Were there many bombs in that area?
Yes, and just a few nights after that, there was a couple of landmines. So we had a bit of a share, really. I suppose not like it was like in London.
Did you use air raid shelters?
No, we had a cellar. So we didn't have no shelter. Cellars we had in the Avenue.
How effective was that in protecting you?
Well, it's you're underneath and everything's got to go on top of it, really, all the floorboards, really. It is more like a shelter if a direct hit's come. You'll have it at any rate, but if it's in a shelter if a direct hit's at it, you're going to go.
Were you frightened of being trapped?
Not really. Not you know, I was too young them days. I think my mum and dad were, but I wasn't. down the road.
Did you ever go into London to see the damage there?
Oh, it was often in London. We used to go to London, yes.
What did that look like?
Well, shocking, really, yeah, some of the places. But, as I say, the air raid is, you know, it's different, really, when you're young.
How did public morale stand up to the bombing?
Very good. Very good. No doubt about that, yes. Bombed out in the night, working the next day.
Did you ever feel frightened yourself?
Sometimes. When you hear the planes overhead, you felt frightened. But other than that, not really.
Were you listening to wireless at that time?
Oh, we had a radio at that time, yes, oh yeah.
What type of things would you listen to?
We used to listen to the news. Of course, then we used to like dancing, so it was always dance music on me. Always to listen to the dance bands.
Did you ever listen to Churchill broadcasts?
Oh, yes, always. Yes.
What effect did they have?
Pardon?
What effects did they have?
Oh, very good. It gives you encouragement, really. No doubt about that.
Lord Haw Haw?
Oh, yes, we used to call in those.
Can you tell me about joining up, please?
Yes, yeah, so I got my calling up papers in March 1942. And I went to Limpston. That was the Marine Depot in days, in Devon.
What happened to you there?
We done our 6 weeks training at Limpston. And from there, we went to Scotland. We joined the 5th Battalion Royal Marines, a place called Pollock Clodge. That was in between Paisley and Glasgow. And 5th Battalion had just come back from Dhaka, so they formed another company, a rookie company as it were, you know, to train, to get up to the standard of the 5th Battalion.
How did you cope with the Marine training?
That's all right. I enjoyed it. In them days, yeah. It was a challenge.
Were you able to do it all?
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, yeah, all the salt course and that, yes, I've done it all, yeah. It's like teamwork, really. That's how it was in them days, you know. You want to do it.
And whereabouts in Scotland did you join the 5th Battalion?
That was in between Paisley and Glasgow. We lived with them, I suppose, for right until we moved to Carmarthen, South Wales. And then they split us up, and I went to A Company then.
H Company?
A Company. And then we used to do training all the time. Exercises, not exercises, stunts, what they call four-day stunts.
What was a stunt?
Well, over the Black Mountains, you know, the Breckens.
What were you expected to do?
Well, just, it's like, it's not proper battle drill, really, you know. You just march, all fight in order, and you use your weapons sometimes.
About what date have we reached now, approximately? About what year, what date have we reached now?
We reached, I suppose it was what, still late 42. Late 42, early 43.
Any incidents that happened to you in South
No,
Wales?
Not really, no. No, just foot slogging, marches, you know, we used to do 24 marches and all that sort of thing. Used to get up in the night to start marching. Everybody. 21 won't march.
Who was your particular friend at this time?
His name was old Freddie Stallwood and Derek Huggins.
What happened next?
Well, Fred, he got killed in France, Normandy. And Derek, he was on dry training in the sappers section. And just before the invasion, we were stationed in Eastbourne, and he had to clear the mines in the school. What it was, we had to keep to the paths. And just when we were going to go, we had to clear them. Well, they did. And they found a tripwire, and he followed it down to a slit trench, and he went in the slit trench, and because it was all come up, and because he got it all in his private parts and everywhere like that, yeah. But he never joined us till September, after the invasion, yeah.
So, at the moment you're in South Wales.
In South Wales, yeah. Training, that's right, yeah.
What happened after this?
Well, after training there, we went to Hursley. That's in Hampshire. That's near Eastbourne, 5 miles from Eastbourne, about 6 miles from Winchester. Little village Hursley.
For more training?
Training all the time it was, yeah.
Did you know what they were preparing you for?
No. We kept on having the embarkation leaves, but then it fell through. And then one day, the quartermaster came in, and he said, "Here, I'll sign here." And it was a big box. And I says, "What's that?" And it was a P-4, and I said, "Well, that's a sniping rifle." "That's right," he said, "you're a sniper." I said, "I'm not a sniper, I'm a volunteer for a sniper." "You have, it's in the papers here, look." So we come and get a sniper.
Had you volunteered?
No. And that's how I come, yeah. So I give him my rifle, and I had this P-14, which is an American rifle in days, you know. And next thing I knew, I was on a course at Pennelly, South Wales.
What did they teach you?
A sniping course, that was, yeah, sniping course.
Can you tell me the details of what they told you to do?
It was field firing, field craft, judging distance, camouflage, snap shooting, everything like that, yeah.
How did they tell you how you should snap shoot?
Well, it was in end days. I mean, he was in woods, and you was marching along or walking along, and all of a sudden a target would come up, and you shoot at it. You've done that for a few seconds. Wherever it may be, you've got to fire at it. So that's how that done in them days. And judging distance, that's the main point, really.
How do you judge distance?
Well, because it's field craft, you've got to judge it, really. I mean, because there's a lot of dead ground. When you look, you see the dead ground as it was, you know, dips. And you've got to think, you know, how far it is. And after training, you get to know it a bit. But these days, I went, now they've got, binoculars now. You've only got to look at an object, you press it, and they tell you the distance. But nowadays, they never had anything like that, no.
So was it just experience? Or
well, I suppose it was experience. Training, yeah. Training all the time. And camouflage, field craft, yeah.
What distance would you have to be from your target to be able to shoot properly?
Well, I reckon that from 100 yards, or less than that, until, say, 500 yards, you put your sights up, but it's all like the snap shoot, and you judge it, really, you know, you hope it's about that size, and you just take an aim.
So, above 500 yards, you'd just miss?
Well, 500 yards, you've got to judge for wind as well. If it's windy, you've got to lay off the target a bit. You know, it's, what can I say? You get to know it. You know, you get to know it like the weather and the trees, really. And you aim, and you lit the target. You might not hit it where you aimed it, but you lit it at the finish. You know what I mean? In that way.
What have the trees got to do with it?
Well, it showed the wind. If the wind's, you know, it's windy. That's all the, see? That's the only way you can tell, really, isn't it? If it's breeze or it's in your face, the wind's blowing.
And what did they tell you about camouflage?
Oh, well, you black your face, and you have what you call a camouflage net in them days. You put over your head, and you have twigs, and used to go into a wood or edgeway anywhere, and then the people would say, right, if someone over there, say, which a couple of hundred yards in front, you've got to find them. Yeah, and then you look through your binoculars, and then sometimes you find them, but sometimes you don't, you know, and then after about a few minutes, they tell them to come out, so you walk out, and you get to learn how to camouflage.
What did you use to black your face with?
Mud, in them days. Bit of dirt. Or put something over your hands, gloves, all that sort of thing. You need to dirt yourself.
Did you wear gloves?
Oh, no. Never wear. But sometimes if you got mittens or anything like that, just to put over it, really, just to show you, not your skin. It's all just show your skin. Because that's so you can give yourself away. See? And that's why you put a net over your face, really. Because those camouflage net is very good. And you take an aim through binoculars.
Yeah. And you said you had to learn field craft as well?
Oh, field craft, oh yeah.
What's all that about?
Well, field craft is, what can I say? You don't walk in a field, you have to go along the edge row. And you don't keep on, you kind of go look, why don't you go down? Then you have a look around. And then you start walking again. That's field craft. See, you just, you got to, well, don't walk in the open. Keep yourself undercover.
Why do you think that you were chosen as a sniper?
No idea.
Were you a particularly good shot?
Well, I suppose I must have been, really. I heard after that he was a good shot, but at the time I thought. I mean, I'd done that course, the first one, and I come top. Then a few weeks after, one advanced one, same place, Tenby, Penelli, and another one. I used to enjoy shooting, there's no doubt about it. I mean, and used to do like what they call a group. You have five shots, and you do a group, And mine is either 2-inch group or an inch group, see? You're in a target. And that zeroes your rifle, really.
Did you have to have particularly good eyesight?
Oh, yes, I suppose you would do then, days, yeah. And then we was issued with telescopic sights, which was were very good. You put them on, then after the P-40, we had new rifles, which is a newly Enfield telescopic sights, which you zeroed in yourself.
How do you zero them?
Well, you have a target, but the same as on a group, really. You shoot to a target, it's 100 yards you shoot, you have five shots, and you shoot, see where they are. And then if it's not right, you move your sight, your telescopic, until you're dead on sight, see? And then now that sight is zeroed. Your rifle is zeroed. Elevation as well, it does, so yeah.
How often do you do that?
Oh, no, once you, that's there.
Doesn't it move?
Oh, no, because it's locked. That's locked.
Did you like the type of rifle that you were using?
Oh, yes, the finish, oh, yeah, you get used to it, yeah.
We were talking about eyesight, but did you wear glasses in those days?
Oh, no, I never wore glasses until I was about 40, I think it was, yeah. I used to get headaches, and I went to the opticians there, and he said, how old are you? I said, I think I was about 38. He said, well, come back when you're 40. Yeah. But I see now, I mean, I can see quite a long distance, but when I take my glasses off, that's when it gets all blurry.
Do you think a country person would be a better sniper than somebody from the city?
Well, anything really, I suppose. You've got to be dedicated, I suppose, really, to do it. I mean, I enjoyed shooting. At the finish, I thought, well, I didn't want to be a sniper, but, you know, I was, and that's it.
So when you'd finished the advanced course at
they formed with the 5th Battalion, then they formed a section. The sniping section. So many, I think two out of each company, see? And we used to do training when we was at Hursley. All sorts of training, fieldcraft, camouflage, map reading, and all that, yeah, compass, all everything, see? And then after that, we went on an army sniping course at Woolacombe, Ilfracombe. All of us went there, all the section of us went. That's the same again, fieldcraft, camouflage.
Did you learn anything different with the army?
Not really, just nearly the same, really. It's just a different area. But funny part about it, I don't remember shooting there. It was all like, of course, Woolacombe, we were all on the sands, really, you know. We did a lot of training, like, more like camouflage and fieldcraft.
What happened next?
And then from there, then we're still doing that. And then we formed a commando, it's in the 5th Battalion, where it's 4 or 5 commando. We had to do, they thin us all out. And we had to volunteer for it. And I went in front of the RCO. And he said, stop, well, you're no good on the aircraft. I said, no, so I want to be a commando. So I was at a commando. So then we do everything done at a double then until we went to Acne Carry, done the commando course. But we went at Acne Carry as a unit. And we went in November, December there, under canvas we was, done our commando course.
What was it like at Acne Carry?
Hard graft there, I tell you. Either make you a breaker. Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you ever feel that you couldn't complete the course?
No, not really. It was, as I say, it was a challenge to everybody. Like, it was a challenge. Like, I was in A company, or A troop then, A troop, and if C troop done better than us, we'd do better than them. There's a challenge. See, that's what it was all the time. See, a 7 mile speed march in end days, used to do it in, say, just under 50 minutes, see? We used to try to break it down. Do it in 47 minutes. That's full fighting order. All weapons. It's going.
Were you ever injured during the training?
Well, on our last route march, I It was a 20-mile route march over there. It's over the mountains, so you keep going. And my foot started hurting the first 5 mile, and I took my boot off and put it back on again. I couldn't see anything, so I was like, I ran to catch them up. And then, the time I got back, I could hardly walk. I went sick and I broke a bone in my foot. I'd done 20 miles of it. But luckily, it was the last route, so because I passed. Otherwise, it'd been like, been in the middle, I would have passed. That'd have failed me.
Did it heal up all right?
Well, I did then, Dave, but I get spasms now, really, from it. So you've got a lot of little bones in your feet. And that's what they say. So I can't do anything about it, really.
Yeah. When did you get the green berry?
After we had done the course, commando course.
Was there a ceremony for?
No, not really. No, just issued with them, and that's it. Because I was in Fort William Hospital then when they come out of there, and I joined them. Airship, we was in billets in air, so I joined them there, and we went on leave, Christmas leave then.
What were the billets like in Ayrshire?
Oh, very good. Civvy billets. I was billeted with Mrs. Flanagan. Very nice people, yeah.
What do you remember happening next?
Oh, from there, I was on. I couldn't do much because I had my leg in plaster, my foot in plaster. But I can remember I was advance party to Eastbourne. We moved to Eastbourne in civvy billets. And I was advance party there because all the rest of them went to a place called Akarakal, more training. I missed that. And I went in between that after I was in the commando, I'd done a commando sniping course. That was deer stalking with the gamekeepers. That was used to go over on the Scottish mountains and with the gamekeepers.
What details do you remember of that?
Well, I think it was about eight of us went out into a little small house or cottage, whatever you like to call it. From there, the gamekeeper used to come and take us out. And was out all day. And when you shoot a deer, you have to take its head off and gut it and take it down the mountains for the ponies to take it into Fort William. That was the hardest job. Yeah. Sometimes they even let us have the liver out of it.
How did you like doing that?
Like, you know, you're trying to do it, and you know, at the first I didn't, but it was, you get used to it, really. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, you saw something the first few days, we never see a deer. And then they split us up. The gamekeepers knew where they were, so then they split us up. One went one way, one went the other way, and we've got them. And we've killed a few. And then we have to take like Fort William for the butchers.
Did you have to kill a particular type of deer?
Oh yeah, not the hinds, only the ones that are like the male ones. Yeah, must have killed the hinds, the lady ones. Yeah. Yeah.
Was it easy to get close enough to shoot them?
Not really, because they used to have to go very gently and stay, and then the other people what. Actually, it was, they drove them into us. See, we stopped, and then they threw, and then we fired. You know. It was shocking, really, when you come to think of it now, but they are, oh, that is it. That was wartime. And then another thing, see, the gamekeeper says in them days, if the mist comes down, just stay put, don't start moving, because it goes very, very misty up there. Because they're like mountain gates, they are, where they run around.
This is the danger of getting lost.
Oh, yes. If a mist comes down. Of course, you're up high there in Scotland. Yeah. Up by over Fort William way, yeah.
Did you ever get lost?
No. We used to all stick together. No. Do yourself a favour.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, then we joined the commanders at Eastbourne. And then we started still training. All sorts of training we're doing here, and then we got orders to pack our bit billets, and then we moved us to a transit camp for D-Day. We didn't know then, but we went to a transit camp just outside of Southampton, and we was allowed out until 9 o'clock at night. And then, after we come back, they closed the camp, and you wasn't allowed back. You wasn't allowed out, and they had red coats inside and police outside, so you couldn't talk to anybody. And then we was briefed what we had to do. We had aerial photos, sand tables, and it was all under different names. We knew we was landing, but where, we didn't know. But the objects, we knew what we were doing of by the sand tables. And then they'd come back next day, that one's done, the RAF cleared that out, so that's finished. Yeah, so then we went from, I think it was on the one day, it must have been on the 3rd of June, that was it. We all prayed, we had to pray at 12 o'clock. We was under canvas then, with folded ash blankets up. And we prayed it then. Then I said, right, get your blankets back again. You're back in your tents. You're not going. They cancelled it for 24 hours. That's when the weather was bad there. So the next day we done the same, and then we went in trucks to Wasatch. We done a lot of training at Wasatch. And then we went on LCIs, troop landing craft. Yeah.
What was it like in those?
Well, we trained in them, and we knew it. They only holds a troop, but very rough, and the smell of these horrible. And then it was about 8 o'clock at night, we was out, and they said the job's on, and then we got maps, and we knew where we had landed. Normally, we didn't know then, and we knew the names, where we were doing, yeah.
What was the crossing like?
Very bad, very rough, very rough, and a lot of them were sick. A lot of them laying on the deck, soaked in it, the water was coming over, but there they were. But then, when we got there, we got to the area, assembling up the area, you could see where we were going to land. We knew it by the photos of the area, with the sand tables, where we were going to land. And our object was then, once we landed, we had to go as fast as we can to about 1,000 yards into a little wood, spinning. And that's where we first group, you know, get all the stragglers, everything else, first O group.
But what was it like landing on the beach?
Well, shocking, really, yeah. I mean, it's, what can I say, it's rough. I mean, it was the mortars going and the shells, and the people that landed before us, the shorts landed before us to clear the beach. Those are dead and floating. Oh, you know, first time I saw a dead person, and it shakes you. And what with the weight, the every stuff we was carrying, of course we done no more, just had to get off the beach, and that's what we're doing, just run off the beach. And then we had to go through swampland to get to the spinney, and I think that saved us, because all the stuff that was coming over, shells and the mortars, it was sinking in the swamps. Otherwise, it'd been hard ground. Could have been a hell of a lot of casualties.
So which beach did you land on?
Queen Red. It was left end of the old invasion. Right near about a couple of miles from Wistram.
And how deep was the water when you got off the...
Well, I wasn't too bad. It's up to my knees in it, but some of them, they went under. But I was lucky when I was up to my knees. Because it was so rough, and because where the ramp was going down, it's like that. So, but I was lucky, and I went down and got off quick with all my gear.
Did you run up the bay?
Oh yeah, we'll try to run with all the weight, because the weight we had. See, on top of my rucksack, all the weight I had my telescopic sights, I had my binoculars, my telescope, and the right. We'll see. Of course, you had bandoliers, you have 100 bandoliers, but you could take more if you want them. Then you have to carry grenades in your pouches, 36 grenades and 77s, that's smoke grenades. Yeah, you can hardly walk, really, but anyway, you ran, really.
How frightening was it, landing on the beach?
Shocking. Well, it was, really. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you're scared. Absolutely. I mean, what were they going? the noise and see him falling in front of you. All the people, and the people that was already dead, gone, you're wounded. Oh yeah, it's a shouting experience.
Did you know which unit had landed in front of you?
Yeah, the East Yorks and Lancs. Lake landed before us to clear the beach and went inland. And our job was to go through there and...